So later this afternoon, Governor Ned Lamont is going to be joining the governor of Rhode Island to talk about the very latest in that offshore wind project that was halted, remember, last month. Well, apparently a federal judge ordered the Trump administration to lift that stop work order on the Revolution Wind Project. Again, work on this wind farm was already 80% complete when the stop order was issued last month. And joining us back on the show is Bryson Hull, Deputy Northeast Director for Consumer Energy Alliance. Bryson, you had sort of predicted on the show last week that a potential deal could be in the works or that this project would not be halted for much longer. What do you know? Tell me.
What are you up to
over there?
And good morning, Melissa. Good morning from the other side of Milford. What I do know is that I think there's parallel tracks in this case. It is good to hear that a federal judge has ruled. My guess is, knowing this administration, they will, until they get the result they want or the conversation they want to have started on the deal end of it, they'll probably go back and ask, on appeal for something different. But I still think that what we talked about last week is true, that these are two businessmen, Governor Ned Lamont and President Donald Trump, and they're looking for some kind of a arrangement on both ends. And this will probably lead to, my guess, as I predicted last week, is that they're looking from the Trump administration side for something like a natural gas deal here, or an agreement to go forward with natural gas, as we saw in New York with Empire Wind, and the same sort of arrangement there. And I still think you're going to see the parallel track. It'll be very interesting to hear what Governor Lamont and his counterpart from Rhode Island have to say today.
So, again, we don't know entirely, but, I mean, were you at all surprised when this release came up this week that they had this huge announcement and that all of a sudden a federal judge basically said you can't do this? I mean, first of all, why did it take a month? But second of all, was there any sort of surprise in the fact that they're now going to just kind of get back to business as usual?
Well, I'm not sure they're going to get back to business as usual. I still think that the government, the federal government, could come and say, no, we don't agree. We'd like to have an appeal. I think if you look at the history of the Trump administration, there are a lot of things that are done. And I think the approach is, we'll see you in court if you don't agree. And you never know what you're going to get with a judge. You never know which court you're going to get. You never know the result. But I think we have seen time and again that they've been told no, and then they go back and they get an appeal, and then it's a change. I think you saw this with some of the immigration raids, for example, in Los Angeles. They were told, no, you can't do those raids. They went back to court and said, yes, we can. And then in the appeals court said, yes, you can. So I think the two tracks are going to play out in parallel. I don't know, the plans of the federal government at the moment. It's, sort of the morning after, right? But I think we have seen time and again that same pattern. So who knows? For all the good of Connecticut and Rhode Island, probably better this project moves ahead. But I still think that the government has not extracted the goal that they aimed to find in the first instance. And so we'll probably continue with the parallel track of the legal versus the conversation in the background to get to the actual results. So they could appeal, is what you're saying.
So even though a federal judge said, no, you can't have a stop work order in place, you think the Trump administration could just appeal that essentially, or that there could be some kind of business deal that is in the works? I guess the thing that I'm curious about, Bryson Hull, again, who is here, Deputy Northeast Director for Consumer Energy Alliance, what can Connecticut offer? Like, what can be the counter? Like, I look at Connecticut and Rhode Island, and I guess for people to understand, what can we offer? Like, what can we counter, essentially, to allow this project to go through to appease the Trump administration and to align with the goals that they have?
I think the president is trying to build support for natural gas, right? And the natural gas pipeline, just last week, the Northeast Supply Enhancement Pipeline, which has been, brooded about for years in New York, has to go through New Jersey, offshore, and then into New York. The Public Service Commission in New York said, we think this is a good idea because and the quote was wonderful. It was, we believe it's non-negotiable that allowing people to freeze in the winter isn't a good thing. So that's going to require some political support. And I think You know, let's not forget that I think it was a couple years back that there was a compressor station in Killingly that was proposed that ultimately the Connecticut government said no to because of protests and controversy.
Okay.
So my guess is a firm commitment to helping expand gas pipeline capacity into the region would probably be the end goal, same as it was in New York, much the same, I think.
If we were to offer that, and again, I know I'm going on a rabbit hole now, Bryson Hull, but if we were to offer that, if the administration then, so the Trump administration completes its 4 years, let's say the office then flips to Democrat, I mean, how much can really get done, or I guess how much an ideal project for the Trump administration that would incorporate Connecticut getting involved, how much of that could really ideally get done in the next 3 years while he's still in office?
Well, that's a fair question, and I think, you know, it's a great rabbit hole, too. I think it's a fair question that, you know, who knows? And the same sort of approach of, hey, no, we're not going to do this, so we're taking you to court, here's a stop work order on that compressor station, for example, could come around again. So, you know, we never know, but I think the intent, as we've seen of this current administration, is to move as quickly as possible to get commitments in place and to move forward and change, to the extent possible, the every sort of law, regulation, and thing they can to get these projects built. Will that succeed in the next 3 years? Who knows? I always say, you show me an energy project, I'll show you someone who hates it. And I think that's always going to be the case, no matter who's in office, Democrat or Republican. So it's a little bit of a crapshoot, but there is an intent and motive here, and I think that's what the Trump administration is trying to do.
And the reason I asked that question, Bryson, is for people who don't know, this Revolution Wind project was, I mean, first started, I believe it was a couple years ago in 2023, with the projection of it being complete by the beginning of 26. So even with the, if there was no delay, you're still talking about a 3 year span of completing this project. So if we were to broker a deal per se, and allow for that to happen in Connecticut, you're still talking about a timeline that I would imagine would probably go outside of the Trump administration being in office.
100%. And if you look at like what it takes just to get things permitted, and that's something the federal administration is trying to make faster, it's on average 4.5 years to get any energy.
See, that's my point. So there you go.
Permitted.
That's what I needed. Because to me, are we going to find ourselves in a business deal, essentially, that even if we signed off on this, we end up spending a bunch of money and then find out in 3 years, again, whether or not it stays Republican or it flips to a Democrat, you're talking about new leadership, new administration. And did we 100%. Just waste a bunch of time and money, essentially, on something that we may not even end up going forward with in the next administration?
I wonder if there's actually money wasted, because usually on the gas deals, it's more that money is not necessarily paid up front by the state, and it's not really supported by the state. The difference is with some of the projects like the wind and the other ones, it is, you know, sort of funded, the power purchase agreements or whatever, funded by the state. Either way, you're right. It's 4.5 years. In some cases, I think there was one pipeline project. I think it was the Keystone XL. Took 13 years. So that's a teenage child before it even starts. So very interested to see where all of this goes.
Bryson Hull is back with us, Deputy Northeast Director for Consumer Energy Alliance. Before we talk about PIRA really quick, Bryson, we got a call from a listener asking your opinion on trash-based energy. So for non-recyclable waste materials like municipal solid waste, using that as forms of energy like heat, electricity, even fuel. What do you think about that?
I think that is a really great idea. I think it's a supremely, you know, cool use of a cycle of a product, right? And I think we actually have a trash-to-energy factory. I want to say it's off of 395 in like just outside of Norwich. So it's a great thing. It's a wonderful way to sort of upcycle garbage, and any way to sort of save to find a beneficial use for something else to make energy, I'm all for it. That's
okay.
A great idea.
Yeah. Well, stay tuned. Maybe that's part of the deal. We don't know. We're going to find out when the governor addresses everybody later on this afternoon. We've got Bryson Hull back with us. Bryson, I wanted to know your what was your reaction when you found out that the chairwoman of PIRA, Marissa Gillette, decided to resign
Let me put it to you this way. If you remember the great scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark where Indiana Jones's enemy confronts him, and Indiana Jones is very drunk, and he tries to stand up to sort of pick a fight with this gentleman and the Nazis, the gentleman says, "Please, Dr. Jones, sit down before you fall down." I think Marissa Gillette was facing an impeachment hearing and was given the very civilized exit of resigning before, sit down before you fall down.
Mm. So you weren't
the
surprised?
The bottom line was, I was not surprised once you saw, we talked about it, that there was some concern about, whether or not she was being truthful with the deposition about particularly this order that other commissioners could not have staff to do
the
their
emails.
Very sort of complex work, mm-hmm. right? If you read the coverage, and I mentioned to you at the time, I was aware of that email a year ago through sources of mine at Pura. And that very email appeared in the Hartford Courant. And it was very interesting. If you actually looked at the document, it is a color printed copy. So that tells me that it was printed out. And I subsequently, it was published and known that Commissioner Michael Caron actually found the hard copy. And it was, if you read the coverage as well, it was his executive assistant who testified in court during the trial with Avangrid that, yes, it did indeed exist. It was here. Yet Pura couldn't produce it. So as I said before, once could be excused to say, oh, hey, my text messages were deleted. Twice to say that this email doesn't exist and people have testified and then someone produces a color copy of it. That's not a good look. And if you are in a position, as you are as a commissioner of Pura, where you're essentially quasi-judicial, that goes to your probity, honesty, and truthfulness. And unfortunately, it looks like Marissa Gillette, who is a lawyer and an engineer, was not being honest. And that mm-hmm. is not a good look, and that eventually at some point becomes indefensible.
So, Bryson, I'm curious, do you think there's going to now be a focus more than ever to fill the Pura board? Because there were still two commissioner spots that were left open prior to her resignation. Now, with her being out, and we don't know of anybody filling that yet, now we don't even have enough people to actually vote. We don't have a majority.
I think you're 100% right, and it was a very good interview you had yesterday with the minority leader, Vincent Candelaro, and you pointed that out. 100% right. So now there's urgency, but a really probably one of the most fascinating details that came out of the subsequent coverage after she stepped down was a statement from one of the governor's spokespeople that said, it'll be easier now to fill the slots on Pura now that she's gone. And that is one of a couple of things. One is that perhaps people didn't want to be involved in a commission that was involved in so much litigation and controversy. The second could be that people were concerned about working for someone who around whom so much controversy swirled. So I think the governor is going to have to move quickly. I think there's going to be pressure, bipartisan pressure, to move quickly because literally we cannot stop having a regulator for something as important as our energy policy, as our energy, period, the end. The secondary effect I think you're going to see, it remains to be seen whether the current lawsuit with Avangrid continues. I suspect there is advantage for the utilities to continue to press their cases because if they can prove bias, they can go back to previous judgments and say, you need to reopen these because Marissa Gillette was essentially running a one-person show and wasn't showing the lack of bias that's required of a Pura commissioner. So I think you're going to see a real push for this, and very quickly you're going to see some names come out.
Well, we will definitely see what happens next. And Bryson Hall, I always appreciate that you make the time for us here on WICC. Thank you so much, and we will be in touch.
Thanks, Melissa. Bye-bye.
All right, Bryson Hall again, Deputy Northeast Director for Consumer Energy Alliance here on WICC.